All present and accounted for, I said, and I twiddled my body cams back into the on position. I'd turned them off the night before when things had gotten interesting with Natasha. There you are, Graves said. Tell your people to hang on. We're decoupling now. After we got everyone aboard, the ramp began to close. A few stragglers had to climb and scramble to get inside. They managed not to get crushed as the ramp slammed shut. As we cast off, I felt a distinct sense of motion. The big, fat ship slewed around and began to immediately plunge toward the planet's distant surface. I had to hand it to those dome-dwelling rogues. They were resourceful. I couldn't help but wonder what other surprises were awaiting us when we got down onto their home turf again. Chapter 33 X-rays, Harris demanded incredulously after I relayed the facts to my command team. You mean like what they used to shoot me in the mouth once a year?
Not exactly, Natasha corrected him. These X-rays are much more powerful. It's not just radiation passing through the body to form useful images. Think of radiation that pierces every living cell in many people at the same moment. The organs are lethally damaged, and death quickly follows.
That's crazy.
I think the attack makes sense, she said. Kill the troops and the crew first, and you don't have to worry about an invasion. We're lucky they didn't wipe Gold Deck as well. If the missiles had gotten any closer, they probably would have killed everyone aboard all at once, wiping out our legion in a single strike.
Makes sense to you, maybe, Harris grumbled. You techies love mass death. It's just not an honest way to kill a man. Can you tell me this? Why didn't they strike our ship with these missiles the second we showed up in orbit?
Natasha shrugged. Maybe they take a long time to target. Maybe we moved inside their effective range too quickly. We rushed straight in and dropped on their planet, remember? With our troops all deployed on the ground, using anti-personnel missiles on the transport wouldn't have been as effective.
Huh, Harris said, turning to me. So what's the plan, Centurion?
We did have a plan, I said, but losing two-thirds of the Legion has probably changed all that. Command chat indicates that all six of the surviving Primus-level officers are discussing it now.
Say what? Harris said. What about Deitch? She's in charge.
Not for the moment. She was reviewing troops in the cubes, and she was killed with them. The revival machines back on Blue Deck are pumping people out stat, but by the time she's back in the game, we'll be down on the ground.
He frowned at me. So did Toro, Leeson, and even Natasha. Who's in charge, then?
Leeson asked the question that was on everyone's mind.
Tell me it's Graves.
It should be, I admitted. But the word is that it's Winslade for now.
There was a collective groan heard among my officers and non-coms. If there was an officer who was more reviled and less respected than Winslade in this Legion, I didn't know who it was. Serving the Legion in the past, he'd been a pet project of Turov's. When she'd bailed out on Varus and joined Hegemony, which everyone in the Legion called the Hogs, he'd followed her. But after that, there'd been some shenanigans during the invasion of Earth by the cephalopods, and Winslade had been sent back to Varus again. Their loss was our loss on that deal, the way I figured it. About then, as to reinforce my intel on the command situation, a familiar voice penetrated our helmets. It was none other than Winslade himself.
"Citizen soldiers," he said. "We have been horribly wronged. Our rescue work here has been rejected by the rebellious lab dwellers on the planet below. They have struck a great blow against the Legion, one that cannot go unpunished."
I had to admit old Winslade could turn a pretty phrase when he wanted to. It was all bullshit, of course, hot air about how mean the renegade scientists were for defending themselves. He persisted in the myth we were here to save the locals despite themselves, and he was so convincing it sounded like he believed it himself. After speechifying for 3 long minutes, he finally got to the point.
"Now things are different," he said. "We can't afford further losses. Our generous hand has been turned into a fist. These rogues have forced us to act harshly."
"Here it comes," Leeson said. "And it's about damn time someone took the collar off this dog."
"Naturally," Winslade continued, We'd rather isolate and arrest the malcontents and bring them to formal trial. Due, however, to our reduced numbers and the persisting resistance of the local population, that's no longer feasible. Every legionnaire is hereby ordered to use deadly force in the face of any opposition. Any hostiles who do not immediately surrender upon making contact with legion personnel are to be shot without hesitation.
My troop looked around at one another. We wore grim expressions. The enemy was tenacious and mean, but they didn't seem to have revival machines. When they died, it was permanent every time. It seemed a little unfair when all things were considered. Winslade signed off after assuring us with a promise of swift victory. We muttered glumly and reviewed the new mapping data being transmitted to our tappers. Instead of dropping in three strategic locations in the highlands surrounding the dome, we were now going to be placed in a single spot of rough terrain. The LZ was about 1,000 meters above the dome and due north of it.
All they had to do was get one more of those missiles to fly over our camp, Harris complained. Then it's lights out for everybody.
I slammed him on the shoulder, earning myself a glare.
We're not going to let that happen, adjunct, I told him. When that lifter ramp drops, I want every jackass on this bus racing down there and seeking cover. When we've swept the immediate area, we'll get fresh orders, probably to mount an attack. Time to gear up, soldiers, and don't forget to say your prayers.
We rode down through the atmosphere with our teeth grinding. Only the good Lord knew what these people had in store for us today. The one thing I was sure of was they'd never go down without a fight. When we struck the ground, the ramp dropped, and we rushed outside. The planet looked much the same as it had when I'd last been here. It was all black stone, and mist lay over the landscape like a thick coat of tear gas. Over my shoulder, Arcturus was big but very dim in the sky, visible through a shroud of thick brownish clouds.
"Take up defensive positions," I called out.
Carlos came up to me and waved.
"Good to be back on this shithole, Centurion," he said.
"It's like an April picnic in Georgia," I agreed.
"I got myself reassigned," he told me. "All the bio people were called up to work the revival machines aboard the lifters. We've got to churn out a new legion."
I nodded.
"Any news about Deech?" I asked. "Has she been revived yet?"
"No, sir. She's staying in limbo."
My eyes narrowed. I knew what that meant.
"Winslade likes the taste of command, huh?"
"Seems like it."
Harris came near, cursing.
"Is this for real, Centurion?" he asked me. "Winslade's gonna get us all killed like 10 times over.
"Nothing I can do, adjunct."
"The hell you say," he retorted, looking me over. "That doesn't sound like the James McGill I know so well. Why don't you go have a talk with Winslade in his command bunker?"
"He has a bunker?"
He gestured off to the south at a low point that was sheltered from the dome and everything else. Working with heavily laden supply-hauling pigs, a team of men were building a structure out of puffcrete.
"He's got himself a well-stocked cave," Harris said. "I want to spit, but can't do it inside a faceplate." "You can," Carlos interjected brightly, "but it would be messy." "And you," Harris said, turning to Carlos, "you're one of McGill's butt monkeys and a bio to boot. Get over there and poison Winslade's soup or something."
Carlos shook his head.
"He's following protocol. Winslade was designated second in command by Deech. With the Legion under 50% strength, it's regs to revive only combat people. You don't print out brass in the middle of a firefight."
Harris gestured wildly. His hands rose up on long arms and they flapped at the sky.
"Are you blind, Ortiz? Do you see any approaching enemy armies? We're on this rock alone. It's a quiet day in paradise out here."
"I've got a solution," I said. "Why don't you go over there and settle the matter?"
Harris looked at me, suddenly calm.
"Is that an order, sir?"
"It certainly isn't."
He grinned.
"I see. But I have to refuse. I'm just not good at that sort of thing. I get caught right off. You don't want to see me perm, do you, sir?"
"At least it would be quieter around here. It's put up or shut up time, Harris."
He looked at me, then the ground, then me again.
"Nah," he said.
And he walked back down slope to his light troopers, muttering. They were all squatting around, taking a break. He began kicking ass and shouting orders the moment he reached them. What if he'd gone for it? Carlos asked me. Well, then the problem would have been solved one way or the other. Carlos began chuckling. That's cold, McGill. Real cold. I like it. He left then, heading into the lifter. He had lots of work to do in a cramped revival chamber. I didn't envy him that. Giving birth to a chain of angry troopers, I'd rather stand out here and die clean. Leeson had the weaponeers, and at this range they were our most important troops. He set up 388s along the ridge overlooking the dome, building Puff Creek bunkers around them. I hadn't operated light artillery in a long time, and I was glad to see them deployed today. While I walked the ridge, there was some shouting and pointing down slope. Turning, I was immediately alarmed. That black slop again, Centurion, Leeson said. They're farting it out of the ground all around the dome. Here we go with round two. From this angle, I could see the phenomenon much better than I had when we'd been in the midst of it. There was no way it was natural or by chance. Every 100 meters or so, on what looked like a hexagonal grid, the vapor was chugged up out of the ground. It soon grew into a billowing cloud that filled the valley surrounding the dome itself. My secondaries all looked at me. Order, sir? Leeson asked. I don't know, I said. I'm not getting anything useful from command either, just a lot of chatter. We continued to watch as the vapor filled every square inch of low terrain. There was no doubt it was heavier than whatever passed for air on this world. It clung to the ground and soon smoothed over. It stopped rising and resembled a black pond of oil after 20 minutes of bubbling. There's no wind, Leeson said, checking his tapper. That's probably why they deployed it. No, sir, that's not what I meant, he said. There was wind a few minutes back. Now it's dead calm. Do you think they have control of the weather on this rock? I thought about it, and what we knew of these people. It's a possibility, I admitted. What do you think is down there in that vapor? They wouldn't fill up the whole damn valley for nothing. You're right. It's got to cost them something to do this. It could be a defense against an attack from us, but we're just setting up. I've got an idea. Calling the Leeson's weaponeers, I had them man the 88s. As a test, we're going to try to cut swaths through that vapor, I told them. Centurion, Leeson said, have we got orders to start hostilities? Who said anything about mounting an attack? I asked him. We're just going to test our guns. We can't do that without burning a few rocks, can we? Let's fire down there and see if we can't find something under that black smoke. Leeson grinned, and he turned to do it. Harris sensed something big was happening, and he called for his lights to set their weapons to sniping mode. Snap rifles could be reconfigured for various types of combat by changing their barrels, sights, and trigger mechanisms. They weren't powerful weapons, but they were versatile. Seeing this, Toro got into the act. Harris had lined up his people, widely spread apart as snipers on the ridge overlooking the valley. At the same time, she moved her heavies up to crouch below and behind the snipers, just in case. I looked it all over, made a few adjustments, and was about to give the order to fire the 88s. A message came in on my tapper at that exact moment. I could tell from the tone and the urgency of the vibration it was from the command group. That could only mean one thing. My behavior had been noticed by some primus or another. My operation was about to be shut down even before I got it up and running. Waving for Leeson to speed things up, I was grateful to see him turn and order his weaponeers to fire. Now, an 88 is a weird weapon. In an experienced gunner's hands, it blazes out in wide swaths. It has a long cooldown, and once the gunner begins a sweep, he's kind of locked in. He has to complete the beam's path, trying to keep it even and steady, and afterwards he's down for several seconds while the cannon cycles through and recharges. The weaponeers were all experienced troops. They handled their big guns like pros. Not an inch of overlap was to be seen anywhere on the valley floor. Vast 100-meter runways were cut through the black mist, which recoiled as if it were alive and stung by the sizzling heat. And there they were, under that covering mist. At least 50 monsters had been revealed. They weren't robots,
They weren't human. They were actual monsters, beings such as I'd never seen before. They had 20 or more multi-jointed limbs each, and they scuttled around like crabs. When the beams of the 88 struck them, they reacted as if in pain. Gray smoke wisped up from their bodies as furrows in their flesh turned to ash. An unarmored man struck by such a beam was converted to dust immediately, but I didn't see a single monster go down. Instead, they scuttled into regions of black smoke that hadn't been burned away yet. They looked to me like giant roaches seeking cover when the lights suddenly flickered on. And all of them, every last one, was rushing toward our lines. Chapter 34. As soon as my troopers got over their shock, they began peppering the crab-like monsters with sniper fire. At this range, it was hard to tell if it was having much effect. My tapper buzzed my wrist again. It somehow seemed to me that the buzz was angrier than it had been just a moment ago. "Sir," I asked, answering the call, "are you seeing this?"
"McGill, what the hell are you playing at?" Winslade demanded. "No one ordered you to fire at anything."
He broke off at that moment as I streamed vid playback from my helmet to his tapper. Since we were already connected, he didn't even have to approve the incoming stream. It just started playing in his face.
"What have you done?"
he demanded, his voice cracking high for a second.
"Nothing, Primus. I just saw something in that smoke down there, and I thought we should take a poke at it. Well, sir, turns out I was right."
"Why is it always you who starts these things, McGill?"
"Just dumb luck, I guess."
"Are they attacking?"
I said, hoisting myself up to the ridge again to have a look. The ribbons of bare rock were vanishing again as the vapor closed over them. "The creatures appear to have all vanished into the smoke again. It's hard to tell, but they were surging in our direction when we uncovered their presence."
"You mean when you provoked them?" Winslade said. "We'll have to step up every element of the plan. These damnable rebels. If I wasn't under direct orders, I'd burn that dome out right now."
"Your orders, Primus?
Keep those creatures from overrunning us. Those are your orders. Winslade out."
Nodding thoughtfully, I had another peek down at the field. Was that a feeler poking out of the smoke at the very bottom of the slope, at the edge of the smoke-filled region? It seemed to me that it just might be.
"Leeson," I said, "what are the other units up to?"
"Looks like they're setting up 88s now in a panic," he said, chuckling. "They should have done it first thing. What's the point of high ground in an open field of fire if you don't exploit it?"
"What's the point indeed? Leeson, what would you do if you were a bug that loved smoke but were planning to rush out of it and kill something?"
"Well, I'd probably move to the edge of it and mass up right there under cover."
"My thoughts exactly," I said. "Let's get those 88s tilted straight down, shall we? We're going to be burning their forward perimeter in about 30 seconds.
30 seconds? On it, sir!"
He began yelling at his men to hustle. They did so, piling up charges and cranking their field of fire more steeply so they could hit the bottom of the ridge below with ease. I liked Toro and her heavies just where they were, but I frowned when I considered Harris and his light snipers. They seemed useless against the foe. An enemy that could withstand an 88 was going to shrug off a snap rifle without feeling a thing.
"Harris," I called, "get your lights off that ridge. Have them retreat to the lifter and pull out 3 more 88s. Set them right up in front of the lifter itself."
"Huh? Right, sir."
Surprised, he withdrew and kicked his people into gear. They raced past me toward the lifter. When his own butt was on the line, he tended to follow directions very well, as long as they didn't directly result in his own demise. Long before the light troopers could pull out a fresh 88, however, my 30 seconds were up, and Leeson laid down a fresh set of crisscrossing burn lines in the smoke directly below us. The monsters hidden by the smoke were thus revealed, and their tough carapaces were left ash gray by the searing beams. Some of them actually ignited when they were hit by multiple beams. A few even went down and died, flopping and flailing. But the majority appeared to go absolutely mad. They charged up the slope toward our lines, and even I was impressed by their ferocity. Without being told, Toro ordered her heavies to advance to the ridge and blaze away.
They already have their plasma rifles in assault mode, set for rapid fire at short range. As the monsters came clawing their way up the rocks, Toro's team blasted away limbs and sent the leaders tumbling back into the roiling mass behind them. Joining in, I found myself chugging out power bolts like there was no tomorrow, and I seriously doubted that there would be if those things got to our lines. Seeing that our part of the defensive line was being unfairly singled out, neighboring units had joined the fight. They sprayed the advancing line with all sorts of fire. 88s, snap rifle rounds, and power bolts flew in a wild display of energy and heat. Such was the tenacity of the enemy, however, that they reached our lines anyway. Our 88s died first. The weaponeers plucked free from their tiny bunkers by extremely long, powerful arms that whipped and moved with alarming speed. These unfortunates were beaten to death on the rocks, their faceplates cracking and blood spraying everywhere. "Fall back!" I roared, and Toro's heavies hustled toward the lifter all around me. The monsters dragged themselves, smoking and crippled, over the ridge and reached out to snap up men by the feet. Troops were killed in a variety of gruesome ways. The monsters seemed to favor tug-of-wars with the fallen, like terriers with prey animals between them. They ripped them limb from limb and left them to die on the rocks. Running toward the lifter and firing back at them whenever we could, we continued retreating. If they hadn't been thinned out and slowed down by injuries, the monsters would have swept over us in an instant. Up close, I was able to fully appreciate the size and power of this new foe. They reminded me of the Wurr we'd fought on Death World, in a way. But they were much lower to the ground. They stood no more than 5 meters high, but their span of legs was more than twice that.
"McGill!"
My helmet buzzed. It was Graves this time.
"Under no circumstances are you to allow those creatures into my lifter."
"Got it, Primus," I said wearily. Turning to the heavies and lights around me, I gave them a grim nod. "We stand here." They looked shocked. Several were already heading up the ramp, seeking safety. Even as I spoke, the ramp began to retract, shaking them off like fleas. I'd hoped Harris's light troopers might have set up an 88 by now, but they'd failed. They weren't trained to use the equipment, and they were almost in a state of panic anyway. "Hug up under the ship," I shouted to my troops. "Watch for the anti-personnel guns. They'll be poking out overhead any second now." As I expected, Graves deployed the ship's last-ditch defense. The ship's external guns were automatic and not very discriminating. They began spraying deadly bolts at the approaching enemy the moment they were deployed. In several cases, light troopers were slow to catch on. They died when they were caught between the turrets and their targets. This last effort finally did the trick. The monsters were cut down. When they'd been reduced to shivering piles of smoldering meat, the gun turrets retracted back into the lifter. Less than half of my troops had survived. Curious, I advanced and poked at a leg the size of a tree branch. It squirmed weakly at the contact. "They look dead," I said. Natasha advanced to my side.
"They must be some kind of artificial life."
"Yeah," I agreed. "You're something of an expert in that field, aren't you?" It was a sore point for her, so she gave me a twisted grimace in response. She'd once engineered her own AI pet in college and been expelled for it.
"They've definitely been designed, I can tell that much. No sex organs, no variation in individuals at all. They were genetically edited together and cloned."
Giving the crab leg nearest me a stomp, I cracked it open. I could see cooked meat inside. It was all red and white with thick cartilage wrapping the muscle. "They probably taste good with some butter and garlic." Natasha shook her head.
"They're almost certainly toxic. If they can breathe this atmosphere, not to mention the vapor down there, they don't belong in a human gut."
I wasn't serious, you know. She smirked at me, then went back to poking at the dead.
"What I don't get is where they're keeping these things. They're big. They must eat. There's no way they can all live under that dome."
"Maybe they come from underground, like that smoke," I said, thinking it through. "They can't have come out of the dome itself. It doesn't make sense."
"Which indicates," Natasha said thoughtfully, that there must also be a way in and out of the dome from underneath.
Hmm, I said. Dangerous talk. Let's keep that one to ourselves, shall we?
What? Seriously, Centurion? It's my job to report something like this. Are you ordering me not to tell the Primus what we've deduced?
I sighed. No, I guess not. Go ahead. She walked away, building up her after-action report, which would have to be melded into mine. I seriously considered editing her section out, but by the time I got it, Graves was demanding to see it. Carlos came out and smirked at me. He had a tired look to him.
You just had to stir the shit again, didn't you, Centurion?
He asked me. It's in my nature, I admitted.
Winslade has to be hammering on his dinner table somewhere in that bunker, he said, gazing up and down the ridgeline.
Here and there, the enemy was still fighting with various units. We'd gotten the worst of it, I figured, but it was hard to tell.
What's the word on Deitch? I asked him. Is she still in the hold?
Carlos nodded.
Indefinitely. In fact, you might have just given Winslade some help in that department. We just lost about 5% more of our troops. We're 70% down and we're facing serious attacks. No one would pop out the brass now.
Not unless they wanted a more experienced officer running the show.
If that was the goal, Graves would be in charge right now. I'll take that as a vote of confidence, Specialist,
Graves said, walking up behind us.
Sir, Carlos said, turning in surprise. That's exactly how it was meant, Primus. Anyway, break's over. I'm back to the sweatshop. The undercarriage on the revival machine has sprung a leak, and it's pissing itself every time it gives birth. It's all hands on deck down there.
Having worked with the equipment before, I couldn't help but grimace and shudder. Give me a rifle and a giant crab to shoot at any day, I said.
McGill, where's your report?
Graves asked me. Right here on my arm, sir. You want me to send it to you first, or do I broadcast it? He looked at me for a second.
I'm not a schemer like you. Fire it off to all points and let the chips fall where they may.
Your call, sir, I said, and I sent it. The second I'd done so, I felt a pang of regret. I hoped my fears wouldn't materialize, but the hope was a faint one.
Chapter 35.
Not more than 2 hours passed before my report, especially the parts written by Natasha, began to have their inevitable impact. Winslade himself came to talk to me. He at least had the balls to come out and stand on the ridgeline with me. When he arrived with Graves in tow, I was supervising the removal of the monstrous carcasses that littered our encampment. Always haven't been a man who takes the easiest course. I simply had the men use the robotic pigs to drag them over the ridge and roll them back down to where they'd come from. A ghastly, twisted pile of the dead lay at the foot of our mountain. Winslade peered down over the side at the mess, and he made a tisking sound.
Up to your usual hijinks, I see, McGill, he said.
That's right, sir, defeating the enemy and cleaning up the mess afterward.
That's not what I meant. You're a glory hound, a man bent on endangering his troops for his own personal advancement.
I turned to look at him with my brow furrowing. Graves had positioned himself directly behind Winslade, and he gave me a slow shake of the head. Forcing myself to relax, I smiled at Winslade. That's right, sir, I said. Men like you and me really know how to climb the rank ladder. It was Winslade's turn to frown, and even Graves winced slightly. Sure, Graves had been worried that I'd tossed the little bastard off the cliff that was so temptingly near, but apparently needling him with remarks wasn't nice enough to suit either of them.
Insolent as always, Winslade said,
then he glanced over his shoulder at Graves.
I don't know how you've put up with him all these years, Primus Graves.
I'm not sure myself.
Never mind, Winslade continued. I have a solution for all this, a clear method that will allow you to redeem yourself, McGill.
Knowing what was coming, I forced myself to look interested.
I've had every Legion tech in the field analyzing the ground here, Winslade told me. They've been using sonic wave equipment and the like. Even the Nostrum has been on the work. They've found large, hollow regions beneath the valley floor.
Those caves had to be there, Primus. I just knew it.
Yes. Very intuitive. As a just reward for an ambitious man, I've decided you're going to be given the honor of leading a new expedition with the purpose of exploring into those caves, sir? I asked suddenly, excitedly.
Exactly.
I slammed my gauntlets together, making a resounding bang in his face. Hot damn! The troop said we'd never pull this duty, but you proved them wrong. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Winslade looked confused and a little put out. Graves knew me better. He was shaking his head again.
Well, Winslade said, if you're so eager to go, you'll be even happier to learn that I've stepped up the reproduction of your unit. I've got every revival unit on the lifters churning out your troops first. You'll move out in 2 hours' time.
This last announcement took me by surprise. We'd barely eaten and hadn't slept since we landed. My face faltered.
Is there a problem, Centurion?
Winslade demanded with a glint in his eye.
No, sir, not really. But my boys are getting bored. I guess we'll just have to wait around for the bio people to get their jobs done.
Winslade nodded, then left. Neither he nor I were satisfied with the encounter, and we both probably hated one another more than ever. Harris showed up shortly after the brass had left. He looked like a man who'd been drinking all night and was only just getting to the hangover.
Total bullshit, he said. Complete total bullshit. They can't send us into any friggin' caves. How do we get down there in the first place?
I've figured out a way, Natasha said.
Harris and I turned to face her. Harris shook his head and exhaled loudly in defeat.
Little Miss Prissy Pants, of course you did. Let's hear it. Tell this old soldier how he's gonna die on another fool mission for McGill.
I wanted to tell him to shut up, but I didn't quite have the heart. He had good reasons to bitch and gripe. We were all being screwed, and candying that up wasn't going to solve anything.
How do we do it, Specialist? I prompted.
We've found the gas release nozzles, she said. They're very carefully hidden, but by reviewing the vids from Nostrum as the gas formed, it's obvious. About every 100 meters, a source has been pinpointed. It stands to reason that the exits from the caves must be nearby.
It stands to reason? Harris demanded. That's it? You're sending us down there to hell itself on a hunch, aren't you? Just admit it, girl.
Natasha licked her lips. I could tell she was slightly nervous.
The rock density at those points is clearly lighter. The tunnels must be there, but they're hidden from us somehow.
Harris walked away, grumbling and kicking at alien fragments. The men had already stripped our dead and hauled them into the lifter for recycling, but the enemy corpses had provided plenty of blasted scraps of meat for Harris to abuse. Natasha and I gazed down into what could only be described as a valley of death. The black vapors had largely dispersed now, and the winds were blowing again. In the center of the scene, as the sun set, was the dome itself. Lights came on inside, and we saw movement within.
They're as bold as brass in that blue glass bottle, I said.
By now they must have figured out that we're not going to blow up their dome, so they're ignoring us.
We're in a full-blown siege, she said. I wonder how long it will last.
What if they fire X-ray missiles at us out here? I asked.
They really can't. The beams can be directed, but we're too close now for that kind of attack. They'd risk burning themselves as well as us.
I nodded. If they don't have revival machines, they know we'd be called the winners in that scenario. We'd come back and they wouldn't.
Precisely.
After a moment's quiet between us, I asked her the next thing that was on my mind.
Natasha, if I leave my unit down there, are you going to find those cave entrances?
If those entrances are there, I'll find them, she said firmly.
Figuring that was the best I was going to get, I let it go at that. With a couple of hours to rest, I checked on the battle lines and took a break in the lifter. I ate a cold meal with a single sour bottle of synth beer. Della joined me. She'd died in the battle and come back in a daze.
"It's been a long time since I've died," she said. "I forgot what it felt like."
"Hey," I told her, "on the bright side, you're sporting a younger version of your body. Those creases I saw beginning to form in your face the other day, they're gone. It's a miracle." She glanced at me sidelong.
"Is that detail important to Earth women?"
"Usually," I admitted. Della was different. Being from Dust World, she wasn't always in tune with human norms. She was like Etta that way. Neither one of them cared much what other people thought of them, or their appearance. Dust Worlders just weren't wired that way.
"It's nice of you to say, anyway," she said.
Experimentally, I slipped my hand out and touched hers. She gave me a tiny shake of the head, and I retreated. It just wasn't to be. I understood. Her recent death had left her thoughtful and apprehensive about the future. That happened to the toughest of us. Dying and coming back from the grave a few hours later, it just wasn't natural after all. Chapter 36. The hours flew by. Night fell and the sky turned just as black as the ground. Gathering my glum troops, I marched them outside. There was no moon swinging around this rock of a planet, not much in the way of standing liquids like oceans. The sky itself should have been full of icy stars, but they were hidden behind cloud cover. In short, it was as dark as a coal pit out there. The only vision we had was artificial in nature. We were running purely on night gear, which let us see something at least. The landscape blazed green when seen through our scopes. The oily rocks glimmered, reflecting a wet, poisonous sheen. "Formation as follows," I ordered. "Light troopers up front with Harris. Leeson will take the center, Tora the rear. Lights, move ahead about 100 meters and fan out."
"You heard the man," Harris boomed. "Spread out. No sense in letting some demon eat our sorry asses all at once."
Ahead of us, I could see the light troopers forming a double line and moving down slope. When they were 100 meters away, Leeson and I advanced after them. Leeson's weaponeers looked sad. They didn't want to abandon the relative safety of their 88s to climb down into the dangerous valley. I couldn't blame them for that. They carried nothing but belchers and some smart missiles on their shoulders. Toro's heavies followed us down at the rear. They moved warily, slowly. I had to keep contacting her to speed up and close the gap between us, which she never did do to my satisfaction. Picking my way down various trails on spiked boots, I had Natasha on my right and Leeson on my left. Adjunct Leeson was a bitter man on the best of days, but today he was downright irritable. He died in the last battle, and I think he was still annoyed by that. "This thing between you and Winslade," he told me on a private chat. "That shit has to stop, McGill." "Maybe you should inform the Primus of your deepest feelings about it," I suggested. "Maybe if he knew how hurt you are when we pull an assignment like this, he'd be sweet on us forever." Leeson chuckled and grumbled a little more, but then he finally shut the hell up.
"I'm getting a reading, Centurion,"
Natasha said when we reached flat ground and began to climb over giant crab-like corpses.
"Give it to me," I said.
I displayed the data stream I was getting from her on my faceplate. It was distracting and possibly deadly in combat, but I was used to it. Since we were doing nothing other than walking, I figured it was safe enough. I noticed an indicator on my HUD. About 100 meters south, a portion of the ground was lit by a smoky golden circle. The golden circle wasn't really there, of course, but it was superimposed on my faceplate by my tapper. It was a way of letting me know where something interesting was located. "Might as well investigate," I said, and I relayed the stream to all my adjuncts. They stopped advancing and threw up a hand to signal their troops to halt as well.
"The light platoon would like the honor of investigating this find, sir," Harris called out.
I grinned. He knew he was going to have to go first. I gave him the order, and he sent three of his luckiest people to the spot. I expected black gas to come pumping out at their approach. I seriously did. But nothing happened.
"Maybe they're all out of smoke," Harris said as if he'd read my mind.
A few more recruits dared to gather around the spot, useless snap rifles in their tight grips. They searched the rocks carefully. Natasha raced up with her equipment when the all-clear was sounded. She began setting it up, and she quickly got a confirmation.
"The caves are definitely under us," she said. "There must be an entrance. It has to be close."
Like a pack of fools, we began looking around. We were all daring to feel hopeful already, I could tell. After all, nothing had attacked us yet. Maybe we'd find a way to sneak into these caves. Maybe those tall, skinny bastards in the dome were all out of monsters and traps. The human spirit is damn near unstoppable in its own way, and rare is the man who truly believes he's about to die, even when it's friggin' obvious. Natasha's machine let out an audible hum. It had found something, some kind of gap in the ground, perhaps. That's when it happened. The rocky valley floor simply opened up and swallowed us down. Not just Harris and his light troopers went in, mind you, but me and Leeson's people, too. The only ones who were outside the deadly radius were Toro and her overly cautious pack of heavies. I hated them as I fell. I hated Toro herself most of all. Somehow when a man is dying, he oftentimes hates those who were lucky enough or smart enough to avoid the same awful fate. The fall itself didn't kill me, although it should have, by all rights. There were bones grinding in my chest, and both my legs had snapped. How far down was I? There was no time to check. 50 meters, maybe? My suit had caught some of it, and it hadn't been a straight plunge. As a bonus, I'd bounced around against some rocks on the way down. Only my armor, which was like a shell on a beetle, had kept me alive and gasping for breath, if only temporarily. Some around me groaned, and I knew they were still alive, but only a few of them stirred. I forced myself up into a sitting position. I was proud of that. My rifle came around, but it was dead. Something had killed it in the fall. Maybe I'd landed my fat metal-covered ass on it. My pistol still glowed green, however, and it was easier to operate anyway. There was something in the dark with me. I could sense it. My night vision was out, so I kicked on my suit lights. Now, that's against the rules when everyone else is running their night gear, but I was beyond caring about that at the moment. Harris saw me then. He had his helmet off. He was coughing and sitting up like me. One of his eyes was crushed shut or maybe torn out. It was hard to tell.
"Put that damn light out," he yelled at me.
"I can't see without it. They'll find us if you don't turn it out. Have you seen them?"
"No, but I heard something."
"Harris," I said, getting to my knees. It hurt like a son of a bitch, but I found I could crawl. "Harris, we're dead anyway. Let these crabby spider monsters come."
"Toro was up there. She can lower ropes. She can get us out."
"Nah," I said. "We're all broken up. Even if they did get us out, they'd just recycle us anyway." He stared at me, knowing the truth of it, and went into another coughing spell. His suit was still pouring oxygen up into his face, but without the faceplate and a good seal, he wouldn't last an hour.
"Okay," he said, accepting reality. "Back to back, like the old days."
I crawled over to him, put my back against his, and we waited for the monsters to come. When they finally did, there was a moment of terror in my heart, I don't mind telling you. The devil himself never looked scarier than these crab things did in that black, dusty pit. We fired our weapons. We knew it wouldn't do much, but we were going to go out fighting. A few other troops stung them, too, from here and there around us. Maybe my own troops were smarter than I was, seeing as they'd kept quiet and played dead until the crabs found us. When one of them loomed near, I saw the underside of its shell. That's where the mouth was, a six-pointed star with six squirming teeth or spines that served as little hands to shove the food into that lowering orifice. That's when Harris showed his true genius. He had a plasma grenade in his hand, and he held it straight up in his armored fist, which rammed home into the lowering maw. Apparently, these things fed by kind of squatting on top of their prey. Harris had great timing. Either that or my tapper didn't update fast enough. I had no memory after that. Either his grenade went off and killed us both, or we were chewed up and swallowed. Whichever was the case, I have to say, it wasn't my favorite death. Not by a long shot. Chapter 37. I soon experienced one of my more unpleasant reawakenings.
"Get him out of there," a rough voice ordered. "Right now."
"But he's not fully formed yet,"
a female voice said. I figured she had to be the bio.
"We should just abort."
"Forget it. He can fight. I don't care if he's deaf, dumb, and retarded. He can fight."
I recognized that voice now. It was an old acquaintance of mine, Claver. I couldn't fathom why he was giving anyone orders. He was supposed to be in prison. Knowing who was talking didn't help me much. I felt wrong inside, kind of sick, like my guts were twisted up in cramps. A revival usually left me bleary-eyed and confused, but this was worse than normal.
"Is he a bad grow?"
Claver demanded.
"He's tucked up in a ball, shivering. That's not the McGill I know."
"He's trying to pull it together. I told you it was too early. He's not fully formed yet."
Those words alarmed me. If they were birthing me early, there had to be a reason. I attempted speech, but it came out as a croaking sound.
"He's a dummy,"
Claver declared.
"He's normally as shit-off stupid as a tomcat anyway, but this is even worse."
"You want me to recycle him and try again?"
asked the bio.
"No, there's no time. Try to quicken another seed from his combat team. You'll probably never get finished, but try it anyway."
The bio went to work, and I heard the goopy sound of thick, chugging liquids as the machine was refilled with supplies for a new job. Something told me I should keep my eyes shut, but I tried to open them anyway. Pain. Blinding, white light. Then a vague shape loomed over me. I could feel his heat and smell his breath.
"Get off me, Claver," I managed to say in a raspy voice. "There, see that? He's awake. The bastard was just playing possum on us, that's all."
He laughed harshly then, but he seemed relieved. I tried to think, but it was harder to do than usual. Why was Claver in the Arcturus system? Why was anyone listening to him? Something had to be wrong. These thoughts danced in my mind, but speaking them aloud was too much effort right now. Groaning and straightening out my body, I coughed and puked up some gunk. That was worse than usual, too. Fresh lungs always started off with a coating inside that evaporated over time, and it was just as irritating as it sounded.
"That's it," Claver said. "Get up, boy. We need you."
My spine straightened slowly, popping every single vertebrae into place as it did so with an audible click. It was weird and a tad disconcerting. I didn't think I'd ever been brought out this early before. I hoped all my parts were there. Hands caught under my armpits and helped me sit up. A warm spray of water gushed over me, washing some of the gunk out of my face.
"Hey, you have to do that outside,"
the bio said irritably.
"I'm charging the machine here. Extra water can mess up the next grow."
Claver chuckled at her.
"Yeah, good luck with that, little lady. Come on, McGill. Spit, shit, and get off the table. I need you, boy. All of Earth does."
"Why?"
I managed to say.
"We'll talk about that real soon, I promise. Nurse, I needed to clear me for a quick exit. I'll take care of James here personally."
The bio came near.
"I'm not a nurse, sir."
"I'm sorry, Your Majesty. Can you check him out, please?"
I felt her hands running over me to perform her final inspection.
"Apgar scores are surprisingly good. Cognitive functions are slow, but acceptable."
"That's par for the course on this model,"
Claver said.
"Physically, his breathing is labored, but I don't see any reason not to..."
Whoops! My eyes opened a notch wider. Hearing your midwife say, "Oops," was never good when you were freshly reborn.
"What's wrong?"
I asked.
"Look at that. That's a new one," she said. "His toes aren't fully formed. I told you we shouldn't pull him out early. We're lucky he has hair and ears at all. Those get printed last by these units."
Alarmed, I lifted a foot to see what she was talking about. Sure enough, my toes were tiny pink bulbs, way too small. They'd look like a child's toes. There were no nails, no hair growing out of the top, nothing. I wasn't even sure they had bones inside.
Freaky, Klaver said. Can you walk, boy?
Experimentally, I climbed off the table and moved around the room. The toes weren't only shrunken, they were tender. They feel like the skin has been peeled off, I said.
That's a bad break, Klaver said, shaking his head.
I could see him clearly now. He was in uniform, a hegemony uniform. He had rank insignia, too.
Who made you a friggin' primus? I demanded. God did, as far as you're concerned, he told me sternly. Now, if you can't walk, we're going to have to trim those off. Bio?
She approached, looking worried.
I'd suggest a regrow, but something's gone wrong with the revival machine. It seems to be idling. I've punched in the next order several times.
You don't say, Klaver asked her. Well, try a full cold reset, and I'll report it up the line. We'll send some techs down here to fix it right up.
The bio looked offended.
We don't let techs touch these. Only our own people are rated to work on them.
All right, well, good luck with that. McGill, come on. Crawl if you have to.
Unsure of what the hell was going on, I dressed and pulled on boots. That was agony, but I did it anyway, and followed him out of the bunker in a stumbling gait.
Damn, Klaver said as he led me outside. Getting pulled out early really messes a man up. Or maybe it's just you. Are you some kind of weak sister? Some kind of...
I'd had about enough of him by this time. Actually, I'd had enough for 5 minutes or even 5 years by then. Grabbing him by the shoulder and spinning him around, I pulled him close to me and got into his face. What the hell are you doing here, Klaver? I demanded. You'd better start talking to me, and you make sure you give me a damn good reason not to strangle you right now.
Be careful, you ape, he said. This rank is real.
I'm a bad grow, I told him. You said it yourself. I'm liable to do damn near anything. Now start talking. He tried to pull a weapon, but I batted it away.
Nice reflexes, he said. You really are, McGill, toes or no toes.
Talk!
All right, settle down. It's kind of complicated. Just let me say that I have the best interests of you, Earth, and all humanity clearly in my mind today.
Bullshit. Why are you really here?
To talk to you, like I said.
Why put me out early to do it? About then, a bio rushed past us in the passageway. I saw him racing through the bunker back toward the room we'd just come out of.
See that? Klaver said in a hushed tone. That's why. The revival machines have been shut down. The bio people are panicking.
I looked around, still a little confused. I let go of him, and he smiled.
That's right, he said in a soothing voice. Just let old Uncle Klaver take care of everything. It's gonna be all right.
This isn't my cohort's lifter, I said, looking around. It's a bunker. How long was I gone?
About 6 days, as I understand it, he said.
My mouth fell open. Why? Why'd they wait so damn long?
I think you pissed off Winslade, or maybe it was Graves. Could have been either one of them. You always have to give people the finger, don't you, boy?
Peering up and down the passageway, I was beginning to catch on. This is Winslade's bunker, isn't it? I asked him. You revived me here because this whole thing was unauthorized.
You see that? Even a monkey can get one right now and then. You're right on the money.
My toes throbbed and I hissed in pain.
But why didn't you let them finish growing me?
Couldn't wait any longer, Klaver said. Everything is being shut down. If I'd waited for you to get one of those all-natural massage therapy kind of burrs, you'd be stillborn back in that chamber, dead and down the chute to the mulcher.
He began walking again, and I followed him. I didn't have much choice.
What he was saying was perfectly possible. Winslade was a vindictive man, and he might have decided I'd failed twice in a row. Pushing me to the back of the queue, that could have taken 6 days easily. "What about my unit?" I asked him. "Are they back yet?"
"Oh, sure. They've been up and fighting and dying for days. They only iced you."
"Wait a second," I said. "Where are we going?"
The lights flickered, then went out. We were cast into darkness. Our suits automatically glowed with LEDs to show the way.
"You see that?" Claver asked. "We've got to secure the power station first. They have a backup that's not Imperial, but it won't provide enough juice to run everything."
I grabbed him again, and he looked at me with a weary expression.
"Why did you want me?" "Because the Galactics have arrived in orbit, boy. Not the whole battle fleet, not yet, but the Nabs are here. They're scouting for the fleet. You didn't think they'd send the whole battle fleet out here blind, did you?"
"Battlefleet 921?
He sighed. "Am I speaking English here? Are you really that addle-brained? Maybe I should have let them dump you down the chute after all."
"All right," I said, trying to think clearly. "The Nabs are here, I get that. They shut off all our Imperial gear, I get that too. But what do you think I can do about it?"
Claver smiled, and I began to understand as I looked into that devious face of his. Chapter 38. Claver and I went a long way back, all the way to Tech World. That had only been my third major campaign, but I'd been much the same man as I was today. Claver, as far as I could tell, had been a wily, henhouse, thieving fox from the day he was born. One point of conflict that had come up between us during our frequent and often violent encounters was something known as the Galactic Key. He'd stolen it originally, and I'd taken it from him. We'd repeated that process any number of times since then, with Galina Turov taking a turn holding the key here or there. The Galactic Key was a total secret to most humans, as it was an extinction-level violation in physical form. It was a hacking device that allowed the user to bypass security on any technology that was made by the Empire, which included just about everything worth having.
"You want the key, right?" I asked. "Do you think turning off a few machines is going to make me cough it up?"
Claver narrowed his eyes.
"Now what's this new tone and attitude I'm seeing? Don't be thinking you're going to out-scheme me, McGill. Don't even go there. You're not smart enough for that."
Claver had never had a high opinion of me. He thought of me as cunning rather than intelligent. In his mind, I had good instincts and tended to get awful lucky sometimes, but I wasn't anything like his equal. I'd never bothered to correct him on this, since his arrogance had given me an edge from time to time.
"I'm just asking questions," I told him.
"Sure, well, here's your answer. I know you have the key, yes, and I think you're capable of comprehending how important it is right now. The Nabs are in orbit. They've been watching the whole shit show down here. We can reasonably assume they know the full story."
I frowned. That could be bad. "Why haven't they done anything yet?"
He shrugged.
"You know the Nabs. They like to hide and get a full accounting first. Every violation they see runs a little thrill through their bloated, slimy guts. They're up there all right, probably having too much fun to lower the boom on us yet."
"Maybe," I said, feeling my brain finally beginning to work. "Or maybe they're waiting for the full battle fleet to arrive."
"Could be," Claver said, shrugging. "Doesn't matter much to us."
"How can you say that? You know what they've seen. You know what they'll do. Earth won't survive."
"That's possible," he admitted.
He made a sweeping gesture, encompassing the bunker, the Legion, and presumably the whole planet.
"This is all as good as gone. Graves and Harris and all your Varus turds, those people in the dome, too. The battle fleet will arrive, get the report from the Nerbs, and the Magua captains will melt this world down to bedrock inside of an hour. Hell, we'll be lucky if they don't burn down all of humanity for this stunt.
How do we stop all that from happening? I asked. Even with the key, I don't see how...